Hello?
Hello?
Who is this?
I have your husband.
Oh my God, where is he? What's going on?
This is a ransom.
Oh my God, what do you need? What do I gotta do? How do I get him back?
I need you to go to your phone.
Okay, I'm on my phone with
you. I need you to go to, the URL on your phone, the web browser on your phone.
Okay. Let me put you on speaker.
And then type audibletrial.com/onefinalscare.
Okay. audibletrial.com/onefinalscare.
Got that?
Yeah. Is this all I need to do in order to get my husband back?
Yeah, and you will get a free audiobook download and 30 days trial, okay? It's pretty good, right?
I mean, that's, you know what? You can just take my husband. I got my free audiobook. I'm good. Thanks. Bye.
Oh.
Yo, what's up?
Oh, hey there, stranger.
We're back, and we're consistent.
We're consistent. We're consistently seeing each other.
Yeah.
So welcome, everyone. Yeah. That's Minky over there. This is Tracy over here. I'm sitting to your right. Minky's sitting to your left.
Don't need to know where we're
trying
sitting.
To bring him into the seating here.
Then maybe
upstairs,
you should describe my whole
and your lovely
condo.
Home as we sit around your desk here, in this loft, this awesome loft that you have.
This echoey loft, and my fan's going back. Who's going on in the back? My fan is
fan
going
spinning.
On in the back. Is what I'm trying
my
to say.
Fan is going on. You know. So this is a podcast where the two of us run through and retell one horror movie, usually, but today we're doing two, from start to finish, even the very end. So as we usually tell the listeners, to make sure, if you don't want us to spoil it, go and watch it. And if you just like to listen for the ride, please do. Last week's episode, we told you that we were probably going to watch that movie Life. But Minky fell through. Isn't that right?
I don't know if I fell through. You sort of forced it on me because you're like, I watched it in the movie theater, so go watch it so we can talk about it. It's not available now. It's out of the theater.
Which
it's not
super
available.
It's weird. I feel like it wasn't in the theater that long.
I don't even know why. I'm not even sure if I agreed to watching it.
I mean, like I said,
week.
I think
we rolled the tape.
Yeah, we did.
But I don't. Because I would have said that I can't rent it. I can't watch this.
Yeah, well, that's what you told me. So that you called me and you told me that. And so since it would have, what?
Nothing.
Oh, it would have just been me talking and not you. We decided to put that off until we can get it again and then Minky can watch it. And we wound up doing, essentially, since we couldn't give you guys a heads up, we just wound up picking two short films
Wait,
to do
Is it
tonight.
Because you liked the film?
I liked Life. Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
it was that weekend that
I know when Raw came out.
Yeah, it was when Raw came out, and I really wanted to watch that. And you said Raw, so we did Raw. But I went and watched Life with Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you should check it out. I thought it was pretty decent. Okay. So we watched two short horror films tonight, and we'll get to those in a bit. But Minky and I, we got together this week to go do something that was very exciting and special to me. So I was
rainy Friday night.
On a rainy
all
Friday
I
night.
Wanted to do was after work, go home and just stay in and watch movies or play on my Nintendo Switch or whatever. I was planning to stay in. I wanted to switch into my pajamas and I'm like, I'm in for the night.
And then
pour a little whiskey, you know, but no.
And then
no.
I call you and I say, please, please, please come with me. I got front row tickets literally right in front of two of my most favorite women ever.
That's high praise.
That's right, folks.
Two of your most favorite women ever?
I'd say so. They're pretty cool chicks. Huh. So we saw Karen and Georgia from My Favorite Murder. Minky came along and it was pretty amazing. We were... No joke, the first row right in front of them the whole night, which was pretty awesome. And
that,
it was a sold out show.
That was the good part.
It was a good part.
Right in front.
Yeah.
Looking up at them.
I was very
looking up their dress.
Are you serious right now? Oh my God. Total perv. I should have invited somebody else. So I wasn't looking up their dress. I was just super happy to be there. I have to say, out of all the podcasts I listen to, theirs is totally one of the ones that I frequently listen to every week then when it comes out. And, you know, I haven't really mentioned this before, but like horror movies, I'm also obsessed with true crime and murder. Oh,
there's a parallel there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's true. And I'd say
it makes sense.
Okay. And no, it totally, yeah. So one of my, I took a history of horror films class, and he also happened to be one of my design professors. He's like an awesome illustrator and everything. Rich Hilliard, nod to you. But he said one night, because so I stayed after and we were talking about, I can't remember what we're talking about, something about serial killers or something. And he was like, literally, me and my wife are never having children because there are pox upon the land. But if we did ever have a kid, it would be you. Like, because I'm a mix of a horror fiend and then true crime murder. And I said that to somebody I knew once, and she goes like this, oh my God, poor child. And I was like, no, I don't, what? No, like it was a compliment. What are you talking about?
And then they invited you over for dinner to the house.
No,
no.
Don't stop trying to be weird. Like it was super strange.
I'm just saying it could have been a premise for a horror film.
No, it wasn't. So basically listening to Karen and Georgia. Well, so one of my other best friends called me one day when I had never heard of their podcast. And she's like, Tracy, you need to go listen to My Favorite Murder ASAP. And she goes, if you and I were to make a podcast, it would probably be this. So Allison, or my friend Allison, my best friend from college, I used to make her watch like every serial killer movie that ever existed. And I had like an encyclopedia of serial killers that I'd show her all the time because I'm just weird like that. And so, seriously.
Who says that about themselves? I'm weird.
That is weird. It is weird. I was like, let's go through the encyclopedia of serial. I've done that with like multiple friends. I'm like, check this out.
Just be that.
So it's not weird?
No, just, I mean,
all right, good.
The fact that you say,
some would say it's weird.
Right. And that's for them to say,
so like,
for you,
them. Right.
For
I'm not
you,
weird.
To, yeah,
it's
to
my
you,
norm.
Right. To say, oh, I'm just weird like that. It's just a little
pretentious.
Like self-importance, right? Like you're saying, like, I guess pulling yourself out of the crowd.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
You let other people call you that.
All right. I'll let them call me that. All right. So I'm not weird. You're weird for not having an encyclopedia of serial killers.
I have to say, though, I don't listen to the two girls, My Favorite Murder podcast, even though you mentioned them a lot. But I was very impressed by their following.
Yeah.
It was sold out theater.
Yep.
Oh, those 80% were women, right? It was a.
Probably.
Yeah. I think so.
We should go back and look in our selfie with all the people behind us.
But I was shocked.
Yeah.
I was like, they filled this theater. And then the next day, they sold out the Baltimore show. Yeah. A friend of mine went. And it was so funny because I posted that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And then all these people who had no idea listened to them, or I would chime in.
They're huge. Yeah.
And then, and then I've seen like, you know, I would see like Instagram story posts.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't really say they're underground, but they have a huge following.
Huge
obviously.
Following.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what's so special about them because
they just have a good management.
No, I mean, so here, and they, you know, what struck me about them was they talk about how they started doing their podcast. They were at a party and, you know, they run in the same circle of friends or whatever. And I don't know how the conversation struck up, but they started talking about true crime and murder and all that. And they were both like, wait, are you into this too? Cause like, usually people don't want to talk about this and usually my friends think I'm weird. And so then they were like, let's do a podcast about it. So that's how their podcast started. And so that kind of resonated with me. I started listening to them, super fan for sure. And well, I'm not a super fan, like all of the people that literally make awesome artwork for them and everything. Like they have some friggin' awesome super fans. But in any case, I think when you and I started talking about maybe doing a podcast, to me, you know, we found something that we both like, are very into, and I don't know, feels like a good parallel. I don't know. Now you're just Googling and not listening. So join me.
I was looking at their website. I was looking at their merch and all these like sayings on there. And I can't even read the first one. I don't even know what it says.
Is it?
It's like in cursive.
Stay sexy, don't get murdered.
No, like is it thrifflers need not apply? What does it say?
Thrift? They have just so many quotable moments, and a lot of people pick up whatever they say.
So what does that say?
I don't know which one that is. I'm not looking at it. Thrifters need not apply? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I missed that episode.
Okay. Some random stuff. Yeah.
Did you enjoy yourself? Because it was really cool for me to see them in person.
You had a moment with Karen. I did?
Yeah. When they called the hometown murder chick up on stage to do her like live story, you had your feet up on the stage because that's how you were all like slacked back in the chair lounging and you weren't paying attention. The girl's trying to get through and she couldn't.
I was broadcasting our logo.
Right. And then Karen's like, dude, like get out of her. Like, come on, don't be rude or whatever.
Like, what did she say? She said something like, is this a freshman senior thing? Like thing going on?
Right.
Like, I was like, what? Because I turned around. I was looking at the producer. She was who she was talking to.
Yeah.
And then she said, everyone say hi to whoever his name was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't know she was coming across the stage.
Right.
Or the front row.
It was pretty funny though. But anyway, did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed how much you enjoyed it.
Oh, that's sweet.
Just seeing how, like, yeah. So, and you were giddy and you were like passing. And then at the same time, you were promoting the podcast. If any stranger that walked up to you. So I was like, okay, this is, at least this has some benefits.
To you.
To us, not to me only.
I was like, look, take this as research, man. Like they are uber popular. I was like, get with it. Take some research because we have a live show coming up ourselves and, you know, learn a little. But yeah, you're right. So when people would strike up conversation with us because all their murderinos are totally cool people.
Can you hear my eyes roll?
What?
Murderinos.
Stop being jealous that you're not a part of us.
I am a little jealous.
Okay. Anyway, everyone is really cool. And when we were in line getting drinks, there were two females behind us and they were striking up a conversation. So I just took the opportunity. They were like, oh my God, can you believe we're here? Can you believe you're about to see Karen and George? I was like, dude, for real? I'm in the front row. And they're like, oh my God. And so I said something like, oh, and do you also like horror movies? And she's like, yes. And I was like, oh, here's our stickers for our podcast. Yeah. And she's like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I don't know what made me say it, but I was like, I said, yeah, you should just check out our latest episode since Minky was an extra in the film we covered. I said, you probably know of it, Cherry Falls. And she goes, oh my gosh, yeah. And she goes, you know, it was filmed in Richmond. I don't know if she's seen it, but I said, Minky went to VCU and
that's when she perked up. Yeah.
Yeah. And she goes, oh, I'm from Richmond. And she goes, oh my God, do you know about the Harvey family murders? And I was like, no. And she was like, you need to go and Google that right now. And I go, why don't you email in to My Favorite Murder and have that be your hometown murder? And she was like, I don't know.
She was, they were like, no, it is so horrific. I don't even want to share it. Like, yeah. I don't even, and I was like, what?
I was like, first of all, Karen and George have covered some pretty horrific things.
Yeah,
right?
And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, I remember reading this story in Washington Post.
Yeah. Well, and they said it was in 2006.
It's a sad story. It's a horrific story, but.
Yeah. It's definitely but it's definitely no worse than like some of the other ones that they've covered.
In the context
of
murder?
I say that
murder,
very carefully, right?
Yeah,
it's all terrible,
yeah,
right?
It's not like the worst unimaginable thing.
Yeah, so you were no longer living there, right? This was 2006, so you were gone. You were long gone. You were here already. Yeah. So, of course, we had to look it up. And you looked it up and you said that Mrs. Harvey was a co-owner of a really popular store down there that you're familiar with.
Yeah, Carytown, a World of Mirth was a toy store. And it's a
pretty
popular
place.
So yeah, anyone from Richmond would know what World of Mirth is.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've, you know, Richmond is a city, but still it's a small city compared to D.C. and New York. So like, if you, you know, find out a owner of certain popular store was murdered, mm-hmm. like everyone's gonna know that story, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
They're gonna, at one point or another, they're gonna look it up and read it.
Right.
So I can understand why it has a certain effect to her
mm-hmm.
from being from Richmond. But to you, it's like, oh, yeah, this is
It's pretty horrific, local yeah, but it's, and it's still pretty local. I mean, whenever something like this happens, I think that's why the first episode or the first season of Serial was so, I mean, first of all, it was like nationwide popular, I'm sure. But for those of us who live so close to Baltimore and know the areas that they were talking about and, you know, Serial, it was like, oh my God, you know, and that happened the same year I graduated. So it was like, oh my God, high school in Baltimore, like so close. Da, da, da. So it's like Richmond too. I'm surprised I didn't know about this, to be honest, but, yes. Yeah, so here, I'll do the chicken line service and say, Karen, Georgia, if you ever hear this, number one, happy birthday again. Oh, it was Karen's birthday, which was also fun. And then two, maybe you guys should do the Harvey Fandler murder spree.
Kissing butt.
Whatever. I love him. so thanks for accompanying me to the show. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it was fun meeting all the other people. Like, we went to go to a bar afterwards, and there was totally a bunch of people there that had come from the show, and they were all super cool too.
Wow.
Everybody's just
basement
nice
of the theater.
It was in, yeah, it was, it, well, sure, yeah. Well, I'm just saying, it was clearly mm-hmm. people who had come from the show, and they were all cool.
Yeah,
but anyway,
there was something I was going to ask you.
What?
Oh, so you bought the tickets that day?
I don't want to talk about where I had to buy the tickets from.
What?
StubHub, man.
Oh no, I guess what I'm asking,
yeah,
it was a sold out show.
It was a sold out show.
So how did you even score?
I don't know. That's why I was saying, like, it was, there was only like two sets of tickets left on StubHub, and the one that said Pit AA. And I was like, is this the front row? It was like two sets left on StubHub. And then there was like two other people on Craigslist.
Is it something like someone bought it and then they released it? You can't do that. You can't return tickets to StubHub, can you?
StubHub sucks. I don't understand. I don't know.
Why, like, they charge extra?
Yeah, because they charge like $20 in fees alone. But I just like looked. I looked on Craigslist first, and there were a couple of people saying they were selling tickets, and I contacted them, but nobody contacted me back. Then I looked on StubHub, and I just bought them. And then that's when I told you, I just bought two tickets. Come with me. Yeah. And I'm super sad because apparently there were like VIP passes you could buy if you bought the original tickets to hang out and meet them afterwards. I think like back when they first started doing tours a while ago, they used to meet everybody and they were like, dude, we can't do this anymore.
So if you like them so much, how did you not?
That's what I said. I didn't know about the VIP tickets.
No, just the tickets in general. Like,
I just totally forgot. And then two girls I work with, they were like, you know, My Favorite Murder's in the Warner Theater tonight.
Fake,
I was like,
fan?
Shit. No, I'm not a fucking fake fan. Oh my God. Look, I got a lot of stuff going on in my life right now. All right. Just, I'm a little behind in some things, and but I made it. So I'm not a fake fan. Thanks, bye. Okay. So we should I'm cueing you to say your favorite words. We should.
I'll get right to it.
Come on, get better about it. I'm like letting you say it again.
Let's get right to it, guys. Come on.
That was too bro-y.
I didn't know what you were doing. You're pointing at me. I was like, what?
I was just hoping you could read my mind by now. But apparently,
no,
you can't.
We're not we haven't mind melded yet.
Oh, we have not. So, since we couldn't do life, I got online to look up some horror shorts. And I found one that stood out, and number one stood out by name. Number two, the poster was pretty crazy, and even you had the same exact reaction. I didn't tell you, but when I looked at it, I was like, this looks like some Hellraiser shit right here. And it, anyway, it's called...
because he looked like
exactly like that guy. Yeah, with all of his skin off. So anyway, it's called He Took His Skin Off For Me, and it was made in 2014. So we'll talk about this one first before we talk about the second one we watched.
Seems a little long, though, right?
He took his skin off for me. Yeah, a little bit. And the reason why this one stood out after I kind of Googled it a little bit was I think I read a little article that said it was on the list of short films that should definitely be made into a longer feature film, like Lights Out, which I did watch. You haven't seen it yet, but I know we talked about maybe doing Lights Out. I watched it on my... many, many movies that I watched on my flight to South Africa. The one starring Maria Bello. And so that one was obviously a short film that you and I think both watched together. And that one was pretty good. I would say that you guys know me. I usually talk not so great about short films that we watch. Lights Out was a pretty good one. The feature film, I did not love it. To be honest, I just watched it not that long ago, and I already kind of don't remember it.
I mean, the short, right? It's gimmicky. right?
The lights out one.
Yeah, and it plays
it
off
was
like
fun,
a,
though.
Yeah,
it, I don't know.
But it plays off of, I don't know, like Mama.
Yeah,
short for Mama. It's like this one trick that, you know, but it just works. It's effective. It's effective, right? It's like, but then they take that. I guess it could work for certain movies and to turn it into a whole thing.
Yeah, like what I read was that the movie that we're about to tell, He Took His Skin Off For Me, should be the center, like literally the middle part, the climax of a movie where you kind of lead into the story of this couple that we're about to talk about and then kind of how it ends.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, so essentially I'm like, okay, if people think that this is good enough to be a feature film, I'm in, because you know I'm a little critical about short horror films usually. But in any case, it was a story. It's based off of a short story written by an award-winning writer named Maria Hummer. And she actually stars in it too. She's one of the two main characters. And so this guy named Ben Astin decides to make a film about it. And interestingly enough, he raised enough money on Kickstarter to fund it, which was pretty cool. So I think we've talked about this before. Like, how do we raise money to make a movie on our own? Kickstarter.
I mean, but he didn't raise that much money.
I mean, they raised 10,000 pounds.
And Kusama said on Wikipedia, she raised like a million dollars. I mean, I'm talking about that level of raising money.
I know,
right? It's insane.
But I don't know what I'm trying to argue. It is arguably, what am I trying to say? 10,000 pounds, the makeup effects were so good.
Mm-hmm.
So like basically this movie looked more than whatever 10,000 pounds equates to in American dollars.
9,000 pounds probably went to the special effects.
I know, right? But I mean, I don't know. It looked great. It was,
and what, like $50 on laundry?
Right. Inside joke until you know what we're talking about. Okay, so anyway, are you done over there? What are you doing
I'm looking up He Took His Skin Off For Me on the website.
Okay, all right. So it starts off with a nude male. You kind of see him shoulders up and what?
Starts off as with a nude male.
It is. It's a nude male, and you're kind of looking at him as if you're the person looking back at him. And he says out loud, it's the only time you hear him talk. It's the only time. And he goes, "Is this what you want?" And then you hear the narration start, and then the narration continues through the end. And she basically says, you know, yes, it's what I wanted, or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then you jump in from there. I think like we were having some technical difficulty, and like before you know it, the movie just jumped right to him having no skin on his body, and you were like, "Whoa, this shit just like moved pretty quickly."
I mean, basically, he's taking a shower, and she's talking about how, you know, not literally, but just like, hey, they're like in sort of vague form, like, would you do this for me? And he goes, yeah, I'll do it for you. And she goes, and he did it. And we're like, what is he talking about? Obviously.
Yeah. But,
and then as she says,
I think you and I disagree about who asked the question.
As she said that, like you could see him stretch his skin out like really far.
Yeah. And that was a good special effect
too. Yeah. Because at first I'm going, okay, he's just pulling it. And then he keeps stretching and stretching and stretching.
And like, you know, it's not real. It was basically like he grabbed his chest area where his nipple and his whole boob is kind of like getting pulled all the way out.
Pulls out. And he just basically just, I guess, takes it off. They don't actually show it.
They don't show it. They just show the next scene of her downstairs, and that's when her full narration starts, and she's like, it happened before dinner that night. And she was like, I had bought lamb. It was our favorite meal. He used to love when I cooked.
Yeah. And then she's basically doing this, like cooking his favorite meal.
You see the meat in the skillet.
Because she feels like, at least I should do this for him.
Yeah.
Because he did this for me.
Well, and she doesn't know yet. He comes down the steps, and you kind of see him blurry.
He's going to,
Yeah. And then he comes down, and he's like standing behind her, and she turns around, and she was like, and he looked beautiful. It was so beautiful. Like,
and it's just a wide shot of him sitting at the table by himself, at the head of the table, and he looks exactly like, if you've ever watched Hellraiser, and when what's her name? She brings her lover back from hell, and he's fully formed except the skin. Do you remember that? And he's all bandaged up, and the blood's, you know, coming through, and he's kissing her through the thing. He looks exactly like that.
Yeah,
and he's just sitting there,
it
smiling.
Looks really good.
And he was just there smiling.
We read that. I think that. Oh.
It's my AC going.
We read that the guy was in 8 hours of makeup, and there's some pictures online of it. It looks pretty legit. They did a really good job. But in any case, so they're having dinner, and she's enamored with him. And she's talking about how he was just so beautiful, and she could see everything, and it was so amazing. And I think at some point she puts her hand down, and he touches it, leaves a little bloody mark on her hand, and they're just in love. He's
leaving blood spots everywhere, like on the floor, on the table, sheets, table sheets.
Table sheets, whatever.
table cloth. Covers, yeah, tablecloth.
And then they jump in the sack because after a nice dinner, that's what you do, right? So they're having sex, and she even says, you know, the sex was still the same. It was even better. It was two people exposing themselves.
She didn't say it was better. She said it was still the same.
Still the same? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So she was like, it was two people exposing themselves and, like, loving each other and something.
One person exposing themselves.
Right, right. She said, and then the next scene, it was like, you know, the only thing that was really starting to change was how much cleaning I had to do. And so it shows mm-hmm. him leave for work, and she's on the floor kind of scrubbing these feet prints, right? And then you can kind of see in the distance, their couch has a bloody seat mark, if you will, like where somebody had been sitting. And she's just talking about how, hey, you know, it's a few more extra hours of cleaning each day, though. Yeah. And this is the least she could do for what he has done for her. Yeah.
She's like, only the bad thing is I have to, you know, clean the sheets every morning.
Right.
When he goes to work.
And then you see
Yeah, that's right, listeners. He goes to work. He puts on a suit, and his head is all red and bloody. And he's like,
and his hands.
He's like, I'm going to work. Yep. Bye, honey. Bye. And just, like, yeah, gets his briefcase and walks out of the house like nothing is wrong.
Right. And so then she says, though work started to suffer too, he would come home, and she said, you know, he was talking about how the clients just weren't, it wasn't working out with some of the clients. And she's like, look, the right clients will come along, you know.
Did they never say what he does for a living?
No.
That's
definitely like
vague.
A nice suit. So,
like office job.
I literally was like imagining him in finance or something. But anyway, and he makes a comment, or she, you know, she's saying he said that we'll go broke waiting for the right clients to basically be okay with how he is, right? Or who he is, or whatever he is. They show them like at night watching a movie, and she's like, and he also started to get really cold. He was like shivering and had a blanket on top of him. She was like, so of course I had to start turning up the heat. But again, like, I felt bad for him, so I turned up the heat. And
the gas bill.
The gas bill started getting really crazy, though. And they show, like, a gas bill dropping through the mail hole through the door. And then she goes over and kind of takes off her sweater and puts it on top of him on top of a blanket. And she's down to, like, a little tank top. So, obviously, their relationship is changing from this thing that, you know, she started off by saying it was the one thing she wanted him to do.
Many things sort of bother me, but one of the things that bothered me was, like, never mind the fact that, like, there's this crazy story where a guy can take off his skin and still live.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things are still grounded in reality, right? Like, oh, he kept leaving blood prints everywhere and I have to wash it, you know, blah, blah, blah. He got cold because mm-hmm. he no longer has skin. But what about diseases? And, like, now he's you know, open his wounds. Basically, like a big open wound.
I mean,
he
could really easily get MRSA.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for real.
Yeah. An infection. And, like, obviously, I mean, we're just kind of nitpicking little things here. But, yeah, it's like, what? That's never talked about.
You actually said, you were like, is he going to, I can't even say it. You were like, is he going to get an infection? I was like, I don't think that's where this is going. Sorry, I don't know why I have this little tickle in my throat.
That's mine. What are you just doing?
I just had to. Sorry.
So, good thing
we're close.
So what happened? Oh, good. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say. So, like, when she wakes up in the morning, this is the first time where he's gone for work this morning. And she looks, and you can kind of see in the closet hanging, like, just an arm. In the closet with all the clothes, you see, like, an arm with fingers, like, hanging. And I laughed. I was like, oh, my God, it's the skin suit, right? Then she gets in the shower. And when she gets in the shower, we've seen this before, she starts looking at her stomach, and then she takes her skin and she starts pulling it to the left, like, really. And I was like, oh God, that like literally
looks
real. But not
far, just tugging at it.
Enough to be like, okay, she's stretching it further than I can.
I wonder what it's like.
Yeah, like, what it's like. or she's contemplating doing the same thing he did, right?
Mm-hmm. Whatever the metaphor is.
But yeah. She didn't.
Yeah.
And then she starts talking about how then they he had some old friends over, and they're at dinner at their house. And there's like a wine bottle where it's like all these bloody handprints all over the label, and there's kind of blood everywhere. And everybody seems to not really be noticing at first, and everyone's kind of laughing and talking.
Well, the whole movie is just narration. It's voiceovers. And on the voiceover, she says they came over and they were open, and they were asking them questions like,
"Do you miss it?
Yeah,
does it
what,
hurt?
Yeah, what is it like? Mm-hmm. You know,
but
which is." That's part that kind of throws me off when we wrap it up and I'll bring it up, but yeah, I'm gone.
Okay,
yeah.
So right, you're right though. Like, but you know, we're seeing the dinner party without hearing it really, as mm-hmm. you just said. We're just hearing her talking and narrating what was happening. But they are like laughing and smiling and talking. But he does seem a little off.
He's quiet.
And then when she gets to the point that they were asking him questions, she did say he was only giving very simple answers, which was not like him at all, and that he loves words, he loves to use them, and that typically he'll use more even when fewer enough. So when he was just answering with like yes and no, it caught
talker, long talker.
Yeah, he's like me basically. so she just says like, I could tell he was off, like something was wrong. So she ended that scene by saying either he has less to say now or he felt he was already saying it.
Yeah. And then they show a scene where a girl puts down her empty glass of wine and she goes for like he goes to refill it.
And she kind of retracts.
Yeah, she like goes for it and they like and then retracts. She freaks out because their hand was about to touch, I
right,
guess. Yeah.
Right.
And then glass shatters.
Yep.
And he's like really
down
by it. Like what?
Yeah.
You understand that, right?
Right, right. So that was the end of the dinner party. And then
that ruined everything.
Yeah.
Get out.
Get out. You don't want to touch my bloody hand.
Oh, get out.
So they're getting ready in the morning and he is now in his closet and he's putting on a suit, but he's looking at his skin suit hanging in the closet. And he's like touching the finger. He like picks up the hand part and he's looking at it kind of longingly. And this is when I'm like, okay, they're trying to get somewhere about like what he used to be or
his fingernail, you know, like, was still on there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So anyway, this is when the movie starts to really shift in that their relationship is changing now and their dynamics are no longer what they used to be. They're not holding hands. I think they used to show, they were showing scenes when they would go to bed at night and they would spoon each other and hold hands, bloody or not. And now they lay down in bed or they're having dinner and there's no speaking whatsoever. It's like an awkward spaghetti dinner. And then they go in bed and he's about to roll away from her and they're not going to hold hands like they have in the past numerous times. But instead, he finally just turns to her and she turns to him and you're like, what's about to happen? And he takes his hand and he puts it underneath the covers and I'm like, where is this going? But then he just like kind of shows her stomach area, pulls her shirt up and starts tugging at her skin and kind of pulls it out. And her face, I think you and I were really trying to figure this out. You said
she was surprised and wasn't happy of what he's asking her to do.
Yeah, I said she looked like scared and not interested in doing whatever it is.
Yeah, so we're same direction. Yeah, and then it goes to black.
And it goes to black. Yeah. So it's it was described as a twisted modern day fairy tale. and then I think you and I tried really hard to figure out what this was about before I looked it up. And I was definitely saying I think this is about when you've asked someone, what did I say, to like expose themselves completely to you in a relationship and then what is lost of you kind of over time. And then I forget what you were saying. What were you saying?
I didn't really settle down on what I think is saying, like what metaphor that is of him taking off. Because every time I came up with one thing, you know, like certain scenes in the movie
didn't make sense.
It didn't make sense.
Like the people at the dinner party asking him, like,
right,
do you miss it? What's it like?
Right. So if I was like, maybe it's some weird sexuality thing, gender thing, right? And he's finally coming out and to be who he is, that would make sense if his partner was either like another guy, right? Mm. Then we could say, oh, it's about maybe like coming out that he's like to public that, you know, hey, I'm gay, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's a little probably oversimplification of what's going on. And is it just about a relationship, about the two and how that gets? But this whole act and his look, mm-hmm. it does overwhelm the story, right? Because you can't, whatever that metaphor is, it's like, oh my God, there's a guy here without his skin.
Yeah.
You know, and that sort of, and that takes away from like you trying to figure out, oh, it's about their relationship, and then it's getting dull.
Yeah. Or resentful, right?
Yeah, like, resentful.
So he obviously started growing resentful of her. And then that's when, like, he was, like, at the end, I think, saying, like, you, are you going to do the same for me now?
Because of all the makeup, too, that he had on his face.
Expressions.
You couldn't make out his, like, subtle expressions.
Yeah.
Where you could with his girlfriend.
Sure. Well, in the very beginning, when they had the first dinner, after he came downstairs in the lamb dinner, he was really smiling.
He had to,
pearly,
right?
Pearly smiling teeth.
Like forcing it to make sure that, right. oh, yeah, he's smiling.
So we looked it up, and... I think what the what Ben Astin said was, the wonderful thing about fairy, I think this was him speaking anyway, but the wonderful thing about fairy tales is how they relate back to our real lives. The setup is so shocking, it demands us to make sense of it. And that's when you were like, I hate that. don't make me make sense of it, right? But that's what all movies do, right? We're always like trying to dig and try to figure out what the deeper meaning is, if there is one.
I guess he used movies or storytelling when things are sort of left open-handed,
mm-hmm.
he just took that as a gimmicky vehicle to be like, we're just going to make it even more confusing,
right?
And seem like there's open-ended story when there isn't, you know?
Sure.
Like, we won't, like, we'll throw a bunch of things in it and people will be like, what does this mean? What does that mean? And we'll be like, it's up to you. And, you know, it's like, oh, you really didn't have any.
Sure.
You know, he just did it for the sake of it.
Well, so then this is what he goes on to say. He says, the power of the allegory is how multifaceted it is. For some, this is a story of nakedness, about holding out when your partner has bared themselves for you. So this is kind of like when I was saying, is about exposing yourself and like bearing all. Others read it as a cautionary tale of an imbalanced investment in another person, which I think is what we were saying, is like when you start to lose yourself to another human being, meaning you are no longer yourself. Your personality has changed. You started, I think, downstairs, and we were talking about it. You were like, I mean, what does it mean by his clients? Like, his client relationships are struggling. And I was like, I mean, if you take it quite literally, you know, if you're in a relationship that is really making you change, it's definitely your changes in personality or happiness, depression even, is going to come out in the workplace too. So I think that's what this is. I think that's what was happening here, right?
Like, but that's... that's based on relationship, right?
Yeah.
Their relationship is sort of coming apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not the result of him, revealing whatever it is that he's revealing. That's causing him to change his emotions, right?
Yeah.
It's really about their relationship as a whole. It's the cause and effect of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. He says when he read the story, the original story by Maria Hummer, he saw it as someone who changes themselves for another person. A love that demands such a one-way sacrifice is fundamentally doomed. And the story urges us to see a toxic relationship for what it really is, horrifying. We, the audience, see this from the beginning, and the moment the narrator understands it for herself, the story ends. I like that. So I guess it's like the moment that she realized that she had asked so much of him and she was really only just kind of cleaning house that she kind of owed him something more. I don't know.
She was unwilling to do what he did for
yeah.
her in the relationship.
And was she, because she contemplated it in the shower herself earlier to kind of expose herself, bare all, give him everything too, but then she didn't. So yeah.
She's like,
she's like,
this is kind of gross. I'm out. Peace out.
Yeah, I thought you were hot when you did it, but like, I kind of want to keep my skin. So thanks. Bye.
Can you get your stuff and leave by tomorrow? I don't want to do more laundry.
Also, like, I was okay with a little bit of blood, but it's getting kind of gory around here.
It smells like iron.
You were like, you couldn't get over the fact. You were like, why wouldn't the blood be black now? Like, it was all red. You were like, why wouldn't this turn to be black?
Because they spent all their money on special effects, but not realistic blood. It kept like washing out the next morning.
I
it was
know.
Like, kind of look like fruit juice, like stain.
I was like, damn, how does she get this out of the sheets and the couch and everything? Like,
no,
you
I
could kind of see like rough stains though.
Okay,
even after she cleaned.
Wouldn't you? She kept the white sheets, and you could, I don't know, just for visual effect, like you could see it. But in reality, you'd be like, F this, I'm buying black sheets.
Yeah, exactly. Black silk.
Yeah. And then I'll just like wash it every other day.
Right. Right. But I mean, it was everywhere. It was just like, so, and also like, stop walking around barefoot. How about put on some socks?
I know, he's not gonna last. He's gonna catch something and die. Doctor's like, what are you doing?
So I will say this. I say I am. I have this on the top of my short stories for sure. Short horror films for sure. Yeah. More than most of the ones that we've watched, I think.
Tells me a lot about your taste.
Oh, really? I think it was done really well. I really enjoyed the full
production value was good.
Yeah.
And, I don't deny that.
And like the one that we watched as part of XX called The Box, it was just the mother's narration the whole entire time. I liked that this was just the...
Box was so much better, though.
Really? See, I like this one better. Okay. See, we do have different tastes.
Okay.
We have different opinions, and that's why I like our show.
And next.
Different perspectives. Okay, so next one, we... So when I saw this movie, I said, we're going to watch. He took his skin off for me. Then, just from the little teeny one-line description I wrote and the picture of the poster, it reminded me of a horror film that I saw years and years and years ago. And I couldn't remember the entire thing. I just remember this one scene, and I won't say it yet. But I go, and then after we watch that one, we should watch Cutting Moments. So I had to look it up by name because I couldn't even remember it. But it's a short film by Douglas Buck. And it was made in 1996, I believe. 96 or 97. But this was... So it's pretty old when you watch it. But it still holds up. And I don't know if you agree because I didn't really ask you yet. But
tell me if... Okay, so I looked up the movie on IMDb and there's a poster.
Which one?
For this short, Cutting Moments.
Uh-huh.
And tell me if this poster explains sort of the tone or whatever of the movie or not.
No, it doesn't even make sense. But I'm wondering though, okay, so basically this movie, Cutting Moments, done by Douglas Buck, it became later, I want to say in like, I think I read 2004, it became part of a trilogy. I don't know if that cover was part of that trilogy or something like that, which is kind of ridiculous looking. So this movie, so it basically, and I don't know if they were all three by Douglas Buck, but it was part of this, what they called the Suburban Holocaust Collection, Family Portraits, a Trilogy of America. So it was like all about real suburban horror or something like that. I don't know. But this one is, like I said, I remember it. I remember one of the key scenes, and we watched it today together after we watched He Took His Skin Off For Me. And again, it's another kind of deep look at a relationship. This one is another married couple and a little bit more dark.
I wouldn't say deep look into a relationship, but yeah.
Well, these are both a look into a relationship, okay?
Sure. Yep.
Stop trying to pick all my words apart. Anyway, it starts off with a husband kind of aggressively cutting the bushes, kind of very...
First of all...
Robotically.
Just to give you a better picture.
Okay. Oh.
It's like... It's like
an old VHS tape.
Oh, my God. it was shot with, like, I don't know, it's like 16 millimeter color film or maybe a camcorder. I don't even know. But
I don't know.
It was really poor quality.
But, dude, Tom Savini was behind the special effects, the makeup effects.
I know.
What I'm saying is,
quote is on the cover.
Which I'm saying, like, why did it look so poor quality?
Yeah.
Why did the movie look so low quality? Because the makeup effects are awesome.
Owed Douglas a favor? I don't know.
Like,
they were like poker buddies.
He's like, look, I can't buy a new camera, but I really want to do this movie. Yeah.
So, I mean, just to give you that.
Low budget. 96.
The acting was horrendous.
Yeah.
What there was.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Okay. So we've got a husband. He doesn't have to act too much in this scene, but he's very robotic and he's aggressively just cutting the bushes with these big hedge trimmers. Just like snip.
Kid is
snip.
Just on the grass in the front yard playing with
Power Ranger dolls. Yep. And
curiously, and he walks over.
Well, and the wife is looking out at them. She's like looking
out. Oh, I didn't see that part.
Yeah, so the wife is looking. It was how the movie started, remember? And you were like worried that the whole thing was going to be really blurry. And I said, no, it's just because the husband's in the background.
Oh, that's right. Because I was focusing on the, yeah.
So she's looking at them and she shuts the blinds. So it was like she stops watching them, which I don't know if you caught that.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
I think
that's
a part of the story.
I remember that, yeah.
So the dad walks over to little Joey, and he asks little Joey what he's up to. And little Joey's about how old now? Like five max?
And the kid seems very like disconnected, disinterested.
Yeah.
Like it almost feels like he has some condition, right? And then...
I would just say he's like super... quiet, like reserved. Yeah, like to, timid. Like,
yeah, to his father. Like, yeah. You know, and so, yeah, it, mm-hmm. it seems like there's something going on.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's something more going on than meets the eye. And the father looks down at his toy that he was playing with. And the Red Ranger is mounting the Yellow Ranger
yeah.
from the back.
And the dad just, he doesn't really do much except for...
Shocked. He looks shocked.
He's like yeah. a little bit, I wouldn't even say shocked. I'd say displeased. And he goes, Joey, I think you should go ahead inside now. And Joey just gets up, goes inside the house.
Yeah.
And it's just a really weird kind of little
transaction. Yeah. And, then it just cuts to the mom... sitting down at the dinner table, cutting up vegetables, like sitting down
chopping
and
veggies.
Chopping veggies.
Like so
not clunk, even in the kitchen.
Clunk, 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 clunk. So it's like they're causing tension with these weird like motions of chopping and cutting, and it's just methodical and just annoying.
And
right?
This house is so
oh my god,
ugly inside.
The 90s was so bad.
God, it wasn't even the, it was like late 80s it looked like.
They're it just, did look yeah. late 80s, but yeah. it was awful home decor,
it was
right?
awful.
They need to get me inside of there and help them out. So the wife is chopping. I like decorating one. So the wife is chopping veggies, and the husband is at another table with their backs to each other, and he's reading the newspaper, and she's like, your mother sent over an old wedding pic of us today.
He was watching TV. I thought he was watching TV.
No, he was at this point. He was just like behind her at the real kitchen table. I think she was like, and I don't know what this room was. It doesn't matter. So she's like, your mother sent us an old wedding pic of us today. She's like, I put it upstairs in our bedroom. And he acts as if she's not in the room. He doesn't flinch. It's like, is she a ghost to him? Yeah. You know, he doesn't even pause. Then she keeps chopping. She resumes her chopping, and then she stops again. And she says, the lawyer called today. By law, he's not supposed to tell us anything, but they might come and get Joey tomorrow. So I was like, oh no, what does that mean? Like, what is going on? And I honestly did not infer what was happening until late in the game. But if you did, if you knew what was going on at this point, feel free to say it.
Not this point.
Okay. All right. So, the mother is all done chopping up and everything, and I think she takes a big trash bag out to the garage, and the camera follows the trash bag out, and then the camera kind of moves to the right into a bin, and in that bin are all the Power Ranger dolls that have been ripped open, and all of the stuffing has been pulled out of them.
Just the Red and the Yellow Ranger.
So who did that?
The one that was doing the nasty in the yard.
I know, but who? You fornicating father. Power Rangers?
The father did.
Did the father do
yeah.
it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So they're at dinner. Joey and mom and dad are at dinner, and it's very awkward. The kid is very sullen. Joey's very sullen. The mom and dad are not even looking at each other. And I remember this is when the mother just starts having really shifty eyes constantly, and you go, I don't know if this is a bad actress or if she's just on Xanax in real life.
Yeah, because the way she was, you know, every line, every word that she was saying.
Well,
was
she hadn't even spoken yet when you said that. I thought it was really funny because I was like, I don't even know how to answer this yet.
No, she spoke in the kitchen when she was dicing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant in that scene.
No. Okay, I meant got it. In this whole
I see, short. I see. Yeah. So in the scene, it took her a really long time. Again, they're really trying to build tension, or they're just trying to draw the story out. I don't know. But she says to Joey, she's like, Joey, how was your day today? And he just is like, fine. And then she talks about like how he got new toys. Like, oh, did you show your dad your new toys or something like that? And he doesn't really answer. Basically, he wants to leave the table. He says he's not hungry, and he does. He gets up and leaves, and it leaves the mom and dad in a very awkward moment of silence. They don't speak. I think at some point he tries to go grab, what was it, like
bread, and she like takes his hand and like
smacks it away.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, so there's some.
And then he reaches for it anyway a few minutes later.
And gets
a few
it. Seconds,
yeah, and gets it.
Yeah. So now it's nighttime, and her name is Sarah, by the way, I think. But Sarah's in bed, and it's dark, and you're looking
She's
at her
crying.
Face.
She's crying.
And she turns, and she looks, and she the husband's that, gone.
No, well, she looks
First.
At her wedding photos, and she starts to hear, like, voices. Like, she's remembering her wedding day.
Yeah. So.
And then she turns over, and then this is when I knew, like, I had an idea. And then her husband's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she starts to hear voices in the hallway.
See, and I couldn't hear that. Yeah. Like, my hearing is old lady hearing, and I could not hear that.
Well, I couldn't hear. Well, I couldn't hear. I couldn't make out what they were saying.
Right.
But you could definitely hear.
I didn't even hear that. Oh. And so at the end, I asked you, I was like, were there?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't. I did not hear.
You must have been distracted.
I don't think I was. I
just
think my
hearing's
bad.
No, there's no way. I mean, you're probably like looking on your phone or something.
I heard the, so anyway.
So this is when I came to a conclusion. Like, in my head, I'm like, okay, this must be happening. But the reason I didn't say it out loud until later on was because I was like, it seems so obvious mm-hmm. that this is where it was going. And I went, there's so many, I feel like there's so many movies that's gone there. Mm-hmm. But then what I forgot was this was shot in 1996.
Yeah.
So at the time, it probably was
probably
edgy.
Really new. Yeah.
It was edgy right. and dark. Yeah.
So basically, after she sees that Patrick is gone, Patrick's the husband. And then she hears the voices in Patrick's room. I'm sorry, Joey's room. She turns back to the camera and laying down still. And she's crying and she goes, what have I done? So she's blaming herself for whatever's happening in the other room. But now that I know that she definitely heard them in the room doing something, I mean, I blame her for not stopping whatever is being done, right? So I don't know why. She's basically saying, what have I done? Like, she's
caused
it. There's
a lot of blames to go around here.
Right. And so, but why is she not stopping it now? You know, she's caused something in her mind. I don't know if I'd go so far as to saying that, because when we get to the end, we'll talk about, like, the story behind it. But, like, why is she not going and stopping this thing from happening? Especially knowing
denial?
That the lawyer said that they might be coming and taking him tomorrow.
There's something. I mean, there's probably some psychological thing going on there, right?
Right.
With her.
So the next day is a new day. And Patrick's sitting on the couch just very boringly watching sports. And Joey's outside with a little toy dog. And the wife is, I think, like, kind of she looks outside, she looks at Joey, and then she kind of comes back into the, you know, to her, what she's doing in the room. You notice that there's a book that the camera features called Laura, and Laura is a novel. It's also a movie, and I'll just say this, I had to quickly Google it, but the synopsis is that I think it's like a detective story all leading from a woman who has been found with a shotgun blast to the face that has obliterated her face, which is pretty interesting. So then she picks up her wedding photo and she's kind of pondering, I guess, over days past, right?
Yeah.
This like world that
again.
Is no longer here.
Yeah,
we keep coming back to this photo. And so she looks in the mirror, in the bathroom mirror. She goes into the bathroom and she pulls out
this
a red lipstick.
It takes longer than it should.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
So she puts on this red lipstick and she smiles. And then she comes out of the room and she walks up behind Patrick watching sports. And she comes around and gets in front of him. And she's like, Patrick.
She's like, honey, look.
Patrick.
Basically. Yeah.
And she's smiling and she opens up her arms like, embrace me.
Awkwardly.
And she smiles really weird, like huge teeth. And
she forgets how to smile. She hasn't smiled in a long time.
She has not smiled in a long time.
Yeah.
And she's trying really hard to get him to see her and not see right through her, but he does
and
not
he
see her
doesn't
at all.
Acknowledge and that she exists in the room
at all.
Yeah.
And she retracts and she starts covering up really slowly and awkwardly. And she like takes her
well,
arms.
No, he actually gives her a chilling look. That's
Did he?
Why she, yeah, because I remember writing that.
Okay.
And then that's when she starts to like cover herself up with her arms.
He's like disgusted by her
or something. And so she retracts and she goes back.
She starts
into the
like
bathroom.
Just like covering
yeah.
up her cleavage and like her leg. And then she walks away.
Yeah, and she goes back in the bathroom,
undresses,
and then she takes
wipes
off her lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
And then she draws a smile like on the mirror
with her bloody finger that she cut on her.
That's right, with her bloody finger that she when she walks back in the bathroom, she drops the wedding
photos
and she cuts herself on the glass.
Mm-hmm.
And then she draws this bloody smile on the mirror that overlays on her reflection of her mouth.
Yeah.
So this fake smile, like Joker like smile.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay.
And I'm like, why so serious?
Yeah. And then, you know, at this point, you're like, okay, whatever's about to happen, she's about to sort of flip.
She's right? flipping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
this is the scene, by the way, that this is the scene I never forgot.
Oh.
So that's why I was like, I remember this.
So she wipes her mouth with a cloth, but wipes the lipstick. And then she looks down and there's a bucket with a mop inside of it. On top of the mop, there's like this Brillo pad that's made out of, you know, like, you know, those metal Brillo pad that you,
yeah,
old school, like you scrape things with. She picks that up and she starts to wash her lips, scraping her lips back and forth and back and forth.
This scene could have been really long.
This scene could have been 5-10 seconds. It would have been fine. It would have gotten the message across.
It
was damn near a minute long.
I think it was going
back and forth.
It felt really long.
Yeah, back and forth, up close of her, like, scrubbing, and then back into the living room with her husband.
Well, and you would also be flipping down to the blood that's dripping on the floor.
Yeah, it's like back and forth. We get it. This is
She's going to town.
Yeah,
but that's not enough.
And she stops. And it's like her lips are all bloody. You're like, ooh. And it's like the skin around it is all torn. And then you're like, oh, that sucks. And then she looks.
And also, doesn't she kind of, like, if I'm not mistaken, it looks like she's kind of pleased.
I can't tell. Yeah, but then she does. She, like, looks, and there's a pair of scissors that are in a cup in the bathroom. She pulls that out. And she takes her upper lip.
And this is the makeup effects that I was like, this looks fucking real.
And she starts to go to town, to start cutting.
Cutting.
I don't know how she doesn't scream or cry from the pain.
I know.
Because I guess at this point,
she's numb.
She has psychologically disconnected
from
everything. And like she doesn't feel anything.
Right.
And she has one thing on her mind. And she starts to go to town and cuts open her whole upper lip off.
And both. Both lips.
And then she looks at it and you can see the upper teeth. And then you're like, oh my God, this is horrific. Oh no, she's not done. She starts to go work on the bottom part of it.
And I was like, dude, we just saw this in the void.
Yeah.
Like, what? What's up with people
and
cutting
their
face
point,
off with scissors?
It's like the bathroom is super bloody.
And they keep showing like the chunks dropping through her cleavage, like all the blood down her chest.
And now she actually looks like a Walking Dead extra.
Right.
Like teeth coming through. She's all bloody. And what I don't understand, she walks out of the bathroom to the living room.
Kind of like a zombie.
She's walking like a zombie.
Yeah. She's shaking. I mean, she's lost a ton of blood now. And she's, as you just said, she's disconnected. Yeah. Like she is, or whatever the words you said, she is far removed from reality now, right? Mm-hmm. So she's walking out really slowly in her underwear and bra. She's covered in blood. She's shaking violently. She walks up again just to the same place where she walks around in front of him in front of the television. And Patrick slowly takes his glasses off. And I wrote down and I circled, like, he looks really concerned now. So, like, for one, I mean, obviously, right? Like, wouldn't you be? But he gets up and...
He finally got her.
He finally...
No, she finally got his attention.
She finally got his attention. And so he stands up and he's staring at her.
Yep,
really sadly. She touches her hair really awkwardly, like a girl would be, to say, like, look at me. I'm kind of flirty.
Or not pretty.
And then she takes her other really bloody hand and touches his face and kind of caresses his face. And the next scene, I said, Minky, prepare, because it gets so much worse. So, and I kind of remembered, but I didn't, what was going to happen next. The next scene is they're having sex on a bed. She's laying flat on her back.
Okay.
The camera
is on the floor and you see bloody
feet
trails into the bedroom and you don't know where it's going, but like, oh, it's in the bedroom.
Yeah.
And the camera follows the trail and it goes up on the bed. You're like, they're on the bed.
And then you see his
butt. And then at first I thought that was her.
Oh.
I thought she was mounting him.
It's a very, very female body.
I thought she was mounting him, but no, he was mounting her.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. Like, because the way the legs were positioned too. Like, why is he mounting her? And then it turns and there's blood all over the top of her. And she's still alive though, because she's still
she's kind of like what
crying,
seems to be.
And like in pain too at this time.
But like kind of.
Happy too.
Kind of like into it.
Yeah. She's all bloody and.
Her hands are outstretched.
Oh, there's scissors involved, but there's the same.
No, it's the head trimmers.
I know.
Okay. Okay, good.
That's how I was going. Yeah,
sorry.
The head trimmers from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And he is cutting off her titties.
It is so, like,
cutting off her breasts.
And they're really, like, showing it, like about to clip it. And then you hear the clip at the end.
They don't show it, actually.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, they show him, like, really kind of putting it together and squeezing it. And then you flip away just as you hear the.
And he's not happy. He's crying.
Yeah.
While he's doing this, and he cuts both of them off.
Yeah.
And then what do you do next? Of course, he goes to cut his own dick off.
Okay. I was like, what word are we going
to
use?
Jimmy. He went to cut his own Jimmy off, and he starts cries, and he cuts it off, and he immediately faints.
He kind of coughs. He screams out. He coughs. He leans forward, and I remember he was like wincing and kind of like, He couldn't catch his breath, and then he falls over on her.
Yeah. And so they, and both, they both are die. Dead. And the kid is and outside. Then
we see little Joey just like laying down, kind of caressing his doggy.
He's and still then, playing outside.
And then the film ends.
The film goes black. So, as the credits roll, they show
still photos
of like, the cops arriving
with Joey out in the front line
questioning the kid.
But you know that Joey must have found his parents like this, which is the most disturbing thing, because he had to have found them like this in order to call the cops.
The funny thing is that they show a photo of a detective and a police officer
finding the bodies from the inside of the room.
Yeah, and then
so it's like their reaction shot from the view of the parents.
And the next photo is like in the same area, but the detective is like scratched down talking to the kid in the same room where the parents are murdered.
Like little Joey, it's okay.
Are these your parents?
Yeah. and so like there's all these still photos that you're seeing, and the one is then Sarah and Patrick on a beach together, like while they were probably before they had back.
Yeah,
and then you see them like their first day that they ever moved into their house after they bought this house when they were a younger couple, and you see I think like you see a picture of her just close up and smiling. That was the very last. You also see like family footage that Sarah's obviously taping of father and son playing t-ball out back. So, and then it ends with Sarah's picture headshot of just her smiling in the camera, like a really lively, happy, beautiful woman.
If any of you out there who haven't put one and one together, or is it one and two together? What's the idiom? Anyway, connect the dots.
It's one and one. Oh my God.
Is it one and one or one and two?
It's two and two.
Is it two and two?
You threw me off.
So is that the father was sexually assaulting his son.
Yeah.
And every night, apparently. And she didn't.
Well, we don't know if it's every night.
Okay. Well, frequently.
Sure.
And she didn't do anything about it. She felt horrible. She felt that by not doing anything, that she was enabling, and she felt horrible.
Well, I think that the deeper thing, though, was that this is where I get a little cautious about how I say this, because this is where I'm like, this is the part that I don't like, the inference or whatever. When she says, what have I done? And then how she can't get his attention. He no longer finds her sexually attractive. She cannot get his attention. And so therefore, he's turning his sexual intent onto their son. And so that's why I was saying earlier, like when she says, what have I done? She's taking the blame on being the person that couldn't keep her husband satisfied. And then he's turning to her.
Oh, I didn't see it that way. Oh, yeah. Okay. I see.
So that's
why
I'm like, that part to me is the fucked up part. The part where parents don't stop their significant others for doing what they do to their children. Yeah. Fucked up.
Well, I just took it as she should be the one reporting this, right?
Of course.
Yeah, and then she's not
and
doing
And somebody
anything.
Has, right? Like, because then we know that there's a lawyer involved and that they're going to come and get Joey. But my point is this. Okay, you know this. The day after you heard your husband in your kid's bedroom, like, and you've known that this has been going, and you say, what have I done? She puts on red lips and red dress while their kid is outside, and she tries to lure him to have sex with her?
Well,
like, what? That's the bigger thing behind this. It's like she could not get his attention physically, emotionally, and sexually.
Right. I just think at that point, like, it slowly, like, just ate her away to the point where when that got to the point where she put the red dress and red lipstick, she wasn't 100%. She wasn't all there.
Yeah.
100%. Like, normal person that's not an option that you would take to, like, win him back, bring him back to the norm, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she was already gone at that point. You know?
And that's the thing. I jotted this down because they called this like real suburban horror, and that it is all too real. And I'm like, what I jotted down was,
that
and
mean?
I know
it's all too real.
Well, that this shit happens. I mean, nobody like cuts their lips off to appease their husband, but the story behind it and the sentiments behind it and how crazy things can get and murdered suicides, whatever it is,
that it's not like supernatural, that it could be
that
real.
This happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I'm plugging another podcast in this episode, but Sword and Scale.
How dare you?
Sword and Scale.
What are you doing?
I've done two now.
What are you doing?
My favorite murder and Sword and Scale, two of my favorites. But Sword and Scale, my God, those are like the most horrific stories I have ever heard. I mean, I have watched so much true crime, but he covers some stories that I have never even heard before. And I was on this one stint. I don't know what episodes they were, but there was this like slew of episodes back to back about parents doing awful fucking things to their children. And so, yeah, this you're right. For 1996 or 97, I bet this was shockingly
edgy,
major and very edgy, because nobody was putting this on a fucking film. And that's the thing. Like, as much as I know about true crime, the fact that Sword and Scale has stories that I have literally never heard of before, as much as I am into this scary world, we turn a blind eye to so many bad things that are going on. So I think this film is also kind of on the top of, as poor as the acting was and as bad as it looked, it's also kind of on the top of my short horror films list because of how, I don't know, I guess calling attention to the dangers that kind of lie behind closed doors in your typical average home that you just never know about. I appreciate, I guess, the film for doing that. It's very interesting because it received a commercial release not once but twice, this little short horror film, which I think is pretty rare for short films, right?
I don't know.
And yeah, so I'm sure, I wonder how many people have like seen this and never forgotten it. I know I've literally never forgotten this.
I mean, it's shocking.
It is shocking.
Yeah, thematically and visually, because it's gory. In the beginning, I was like, is this another stupid short film that she picked?
Thanks.
And it did. It kept heightening. And it got, and then until it hit its crescendo.
There's a payoff.
The end.
Yeah. I don't know why they both had to die, or like why they had to die in the manner that they did, like in the sexual act. And then cutting off all their sexual body parts. You know, I can't even. But yeah. So both were about you don't think it's a deep look at relationships? That's what I started off by saying. I said it's a deep look in relationships. You're like, I don't know if I'd say deep.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would say deep look into a couple's relationship.
Yeah.
It almost feels like it's like a victim and not perpetrator, but it's like the type of relationship.
Yeah.
I know she felt like she was like in hell, trapped, you know, mm-hmm. by her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And this horror that was happening that she was trying to ignore.
Yeah.
And she felt like, because she ended up becoming, she's the main character in the short. And then she is just sadly trying her best to take control of the situation.
Yeah.
Right. And by like putting on lipstick or whatever it is. And she eventually, you know, sacrificed herself to take control and take, you know, him with her.
Interesting. You know? I didn't even think about it like that.
Yeah. So it was that type of like capture and whatever victim relationship that I saw, and it's just like,
wow.
Yeah. So anyways.
Yeah, she sacrificed herself to like keep, I don't know, that's kind of crazy. Mm. Although I think they probably, as fucked up as poor Joey probably already is, he's probably even more fucked up now that he saw his parents like naked
poor
bloody
kid,
bodies.
Right. And
that poor kid.
Carrying some of his father's genes.
So thank you so much for listening to these two gruesome
usually
stories about
fun,
skin
fun
and blood
episodes. We usually joke around.
You know what though, these were pretty good. I have to say, this was like a good double
feature.
Didn't
bum you out, guys.
Don't be bummed out. So, and listen, here's a way to not be bummed out. Go to our Instagram page or our Facebook page. Just like go have fun and like go look at what we post, maybe comment once or twice. And don't forget, if you want one of these cool shirts, Minky and I are literally wearing the same ones right now. If you want a cool shirt like us, go to redbubble.com, search for One Final Scare in the search bar, and you can find our page. Mm-hmm. You can get whatever you want. And Minky's trying to remind me to say something, and I just don't know.
Oh, we have a letter.
No, we don't.
Oh, we don't?
No.
Well, sad. Sad.
But, hey, guess what? We're gonna.
Was it Carly from Artist Shop?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Time?
Can we stop getting emails from Carly at Artist Shop?
Bot from Artist Shop.
I know.
Yeah.
No, but we want to stick on this flesh theme because we saw another movie pop up on Shudder, the Shudder Hero. So we want to do next episode. We're going to cover.
We Are the Flesh.
We Are the Flesh. It's a Mexican French horror, and looks a little gruesome. So let's keep this gruesome ride going.
It looks a little crazy. But yeah, so until then, this is Minky.
And this is Tracy.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.